We kick off hour number three of the program. This segment brought to you by Gold's Gym, the official gym of Three and Out. We go to Davey Hudson, former 12-week challenge winner at Gold's Gym, for today's fitness tip of the day.
Today's Gold's Gym fitness tip of the day is do not go to the grocery store hungry.
It's a really good point.
It's actually a healthy one, and it will affect your wallet in the long run. When you go hungry, you're more tempted to buy unnecessary foods that you're just kind of craving in the moment. But if you eat right before you go, you typically, you're in a better mindset of like, all right, I'm going to make sure to get some foods that are healthier.
Yep, swing by Taco Bell on your way to the grocery store. You won't buy the junk.
Smart.
I wouldn't necessarily go with the Taco Bell route.
They can eat healthy there. They got the Fresco menu.
You can, I mean, you can do that. I'm saying you can.
You can get shredded chicken.
I would advise against it, but you can do that.
Jay mentioned Chris Aparogane.
But seriously, real quick, the going to the grocery store hungry is a terrible idea. That's a good fitness tip.
Oh, yeah.
It's a really good fitness tip.
Gold's Gym, the official gym.
You end up with, like, gummy worms and chips, chocolate, cheeseburgers.
Ice cream.
Yeah. Ice cream. Yeah, it sounds pretty good. Yeah. What's your go-to? You got a go-to ice cream? Not anymore, of course.
I like the mint chocolate chip. Cookies and cream. Big Moose Tracks guy.
A lot of milk in ice cream.
A lot of sugar, too.
Mm-hmm. No cheese, though. So, you're in?
Yeah.
Just checking.
Jay mentioned Chris Aparogane. He started at guard for the second team.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you were talking about the offensive lineman. So Jerome Carvin started at center for the second team.
Yes.
I mean, it is possible that they really only felt comfortable. They only really feel comfortable with those two guys playing center.
I think so.
Right?
Yeah.
Because really that gives you, with Brandon Kennedy back, three centers. You typically don't need more than three centers.
No.
So that maybe Jerome Carvin would be higher up the board. I thought he was ahead of Ryan Johnson, though, so I don't know. That's strange. They may have split the offensive line a little bit.
That's what I'm wondering.
Or they may just not know who's any good. But Chris Aparogane started at left guard for the Orange team. And there's Riley Locklear, I think, started at right guard for the Orange team. They need to just identify. And maybe we're in the same situation as last year. Maybe these guys just aren't any good. Like, no, they're all just are who they are. Like, they're not going to.
Not going to be that much better.
Yeah. I mean, but let's.
We good need, positive outlook here.
We need to go ahead and pick who we think's going to be at least serviceable and give them all the reps, right? And just go with it.
I mean, that's the thing, though. You can't really do that preparing for an Orange and White game. Like, you have to field two offensive lines
right, with,
you know, backups here and there. So that's why I'm wondering, did we maybe shift a couple guys that would normally be able to come in and spell somebody or in certain situations would be better than what we had on one team or the other? That's why I'm not ready to just bury the offensive line. But, yeah, this is a group that it seems as if new people are going to be the way to fix it. And they're getting those people, and that's the good part. They're getting the 4- and 5-star top-rated linemen. They're getting them to campus. They're getting them to commit. And then I think it goes back to Jay's question, like, okay, Wilfriend, like, now we need to start seeing you develop what you already had, and I get it. Maybe the cupboard was a little bit bare. But some of these guys we know are not terrible. Time for you to make them take the next step.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know what Ryan Johnson's ceiling is or what position that ceiling would be at. But I know Wanya Morris has a chance to be pretty damn good. I think Carvin has a chance to be pretty damn good. I'm with you on Kennedy. I just don't know yet. Darnell Wright, I would think, when he gets here, has a chance to be pretty damn good. I think you've got enough bodies that you can rotate a lot of guys at guard. If Morris or Wright need more time or get hurt, though, you're going to be busted at one of your tackle spots. I think Marcus Tatum is serviceable. I do not think he's an elite offensive tackle. If he gets better, that's great, but if you lose one of these top-rated guys for whatever reason, or if, you know, Darnell Wright shows up, he's just not quite as good as maybe you'd hoped he would be, you're gonna have some issues. Because depth at tackle is a problem. I think depth at guard is fine, but you don't have anybody who you just can count on right now to blow people out of the water.
Yeah, I mean, the first play of the game, you've got Marcus Tatum on Darrell Taylor. And he, you know, Tatum kind of gets the right spot initially, but Taylor's so much quicker and faster that he basically forces the running back just right back into the backside pursuit. And you're even though the interior of the line blocked that really well. And, you know, and David, to your point, I don't know. That was a kind of an inside zone scheme. I don't know what we'll see with Chaney. You know, in kind of rewatching some of this stuff, the offense for the orange team's running some of the exact same plays the offense from the white team's running. So, you know, maybe, and you made a good point. I don't know if I can remember if it was the last segment or in the break, but when Pruitt's standing out there,
Someone tweeted that in. I want to make sure I give credit because I thought that was a really good point. It might have been George Vall. But, yeah, when Pruitt's right behind the offensive line pointing out to the defensive lineman, hey, go here, going to make it pretty tough. Like, Pruitt's a defensive guy. Obviously, he wants his dudes to have some success. Maybe he was tipping the hand of the offense a little bit. Just kind of maybe tattling on what the offensive line was doing.
They also got a response to the question Jay asked about Will Friend. Like, at what point are we, you know, kind of like, buddy?
Sorry, it was Brian. Vol Asher tweeted that in. When your head coach is standing behind the offensive line telling them where and when to rush, not going to help the offense at all.
Yeah.
Decent point. It's possible Pruitt was cheating a little bit.
I will say, Will Friend, halfway through this season, if we don't see improvements, that's when people are going to be, you know, start to get worried. I don't really count last year because we were pitifully thin and we lost probably our two best linemen early in the year. We have more depth now and it should be better.
And to his credit, he's recruiting the type of offensive lineman it takes to win big in this conference. I think we agree with that, right? Like the stars, the ratings, the body types, they're coming in. It's kind of like the Holly situation, though. Okay, if you start getting the recruits and you still stink, we know what the problem is, and it's you. And it's amazing to me how, and granted, we have a small sample size. We have 1 year, and as you know, you just mentioned, like, it was a beat-up offensive line that didn't have a lot of depth. But when you start getting these types of players in, you start having, you know, another year in the weight program, another year in the film room, another year of coaching and development. We need to see a lot of these guys take a next step. I'm not saying they don't have to come out and be world beaters, but we cannot be the team that can't run forward. We cannot be the team that can't communicate a simple switch on a twist or a stunt. And last year, the simplest defensive line concepts tricked the hell out of Will Friend's offensive line. Basic stuff. I mean, go back and watch the very first play of last season. We snap it. Tackle goes right. We go left. Jared is crushed. That can't happen. That type of miscommunication, that type of mistake just absolutely cannot happen this year. And that's what's scary when you watch Ollie Lane just barely touch Kyven Bennett. It's like, why did you step out initially when he stepped in? It's like they're doing the motions, but they're not playing football. Okay, yeah. I'm supposed to take a big step backwards and out with my right foot because that's what a right tackle does. Yeah, but he went inside. You're now 3 feet further away from him than you could be. It's like, yeah, but I took my big step. It's like, okay, we got to start playing football now. Seems like a problem. Good job on the step. The step will look great when we're doing the step drill. You got to play football, man. Like, you got to realize, like, it's a reactionary game when you're on the offensive line, especially in pass protection, right? Like, you kind of do your little duty, and then you wait and see what the defensive linemen do and make your adjustments. It seems like we're so caught up in the fundamentals of it that we forget that it's a human being. I have to just block him. Like, at some point, you just say, damn the footwork. Damn the perfect technique. Damn what the call was. I got to stop this guy from breaking my quarterback in half. That seems to be where the breakdowns always occur. It's like we just have guys doing the wrong thing for what the defensive line is trying to do. Doesn't make much sense to me. Like, why are we stepping out into the right when they're going in into the left? It's just, come on. Like, you should take half a step, realize the guy's going the other way, and okay, I got to adjust now. I got to just make a play.
It's definitely still a problem, and I don't know where you put all the blame. Like, it's something that I'm going to be looking for, not so much in a holistic, like, offensive line played great all day today, but, like, what do we see out of these? Because getting new players in and then watching them play well is just as, like, that should be a credit to Will Friend and the staff. If it's the older players just still aren't any good, then maybe they're just not any good. But I need to see some combo of older guys getting better and the new guys flashing and or getting better during the season. So I think halfway through the year, and really it's not even going to be halfway through the year for Tennessee. I mean, they've got the double bye stuff this year. I mean, you've got a couple of simple non-conference games that you're going to win that you should be able to get better in. The BYU game will be an early test, but you should be good enough on the offensive line to win that game. If you're not, that's obviously a huge issue. And then, you know, it's going to be a month into the season, and then you get to see Tennessee go up against the teams who have lines that play the way you need to be playing in year two. And we'll be able to kind of judge that with our own eyes as we go. We'll come back and roll on here. Hour number three of the program, talking some Tennessee football. Stick with us right here on Three and Out. Welcome back into the Fan Run Studios, Fox Sports Knoxville. No, good news for you. Chris.
Bacon Frog 56 loves the new Old Ben Franklin Motors song.
All right.
Come on down.
I don't think he loves it, though.
Oh.
I think he... I can't read what he said about it. I think it's catchy. And the fact that you're noticing it, Bacon Frog, tells you that it's working. Yeah. Just come on down.
Mm-hmm.
Come on down.
George Duvall says, I will say, if the offensive line sucks again, it will be a test for Pruitt, too.
Can he get rid of his bud?
Because if he can't fire Friend, if he isn't improving the line, he may not be the right coach.
This is where we rely on Jim Chaney to say, we're fixing this.
Yeah.
Get out of here. This is stupid. Let me help.
Well, noted Vols expert and former coach Doug Matthews weighed in on his show yesterday, Houston. Have no fear or be very afraid. I'm not sure which way to take this.
Yes.
He said he doesn't expect your tackles to be true freshmen to start the season. And if they are, then we're in trouble in the SEC.
Oh, that's how we're in trouble. Yeah. If the 2 5-star tackles aren't good, we're in trouble. Gotcha. The two highest-rated tackles.
Did he not watch the game on Saturday? Like, does he not? Does he think Wanya Moore starting left tackle is like a joke? Does he think that's like, if Wanya Moore isn't the best option at left tackle, but he's the starting left tackle, does he not realize? Like, I thought this guy was a coach before.
Is there someone I'm missing?
Like
is there a secret player that didn't start? Grad transfers.
I mean, don't you think
that's banking on Trey Smith? But even like, don't you even think? Then, I feel like you put him at guard.
Don't you think the veteran tackles on the team would be pretty ticked off if Wanya Morris got the start at left tackle
and stunk
on the first string team if he wasn't the best option? Like, he's already the best option. In fact, he got pushed back a little bit on one of the pass plays, but held his own and was still fine in the protection, and Garantano threw the ball early, short of the sticks, because he felt some phantom pressure back there, and, you know.
Got to trust. Got to build the trust.
I know. He had it. He could have waited a little longer and had a guy deeper over the middle. So hopefully that's something they'll get better at.
I feel like this is the
– I feel like we're in trouble.
Do you start the junior quarterback or the promising true freshman? Like, do you play for the future, or do you just say, well, this guy's been here, he might not make as many mistakes? But, boy, the talent of the youngster is just really out there.
But that's the thing. Like, the coaching staff's already made their decision. Wanya Moore started left tackle in the spring game. Like, if it was close
maybe
at
that was
all,
a recruiting promise.
if it was close
hey,
at all.
Hey, I don't know. I think I'm going to West Virginia. Oh, wait. You can start the spring game. Vol for life. That's what it was.
Like
Pruitt said, it'll be a sold-out crowd.
Apparently, the North Carolina coach just promised the recruits that it'd be packed.
Oh,
they have 1,500 people.
No, they did not. They announced 1,500.
No, they did not.
I
saw that was an NC State person that posted that first picture when there really is like 13 people. If that was pretty early.
That stadium doesn't hold that many, man. Like
50,000. Anyway,
was
we can
it a
argue
third
about this
full?
Later.
Was it a third full?
No, 1,500, Houston. 1,500 is what they reported. I think that's pretty accurate.
Golly. Was it a...
Not 15,000, 1,500.
Was it a tenth full? Math's hard. 1,500.
Yeah.
100.
Yeah.
You think they did have 1,500?
1,500, yes.
Okay.
Yeah. I think they were just like, screw it. Just give out the actual number at this point. Like, don't even try and lie about this one.
87 people. 87 have showed up.
I think they even said it was an estimated like 1,587 people or whatever. You know, it's like, wait, you estimated to the like seventh person? Anyway, back
to
the
offensive
line.
Well,
you
got to make it a weird, odd last two digits so that no one
think.
Yeah. You don't want to give it away.
Okay, so like Quaveris Crouch and Jalen McCullough are playing with the twos, right? Like we hope Crouch, especially with the Kirkland news, is like so good inside linebacker that like he and Batuli might be starting if not the first game, like early in the season, right? Like those are positions where you went with the incumbent in the spring game just because, you know, they're young and you wanted to make sure and go with the guys that were already there. So, but Wanya Morse like is already ahead of all those guys, and he's not gonna start. Yeah, that makes no sense. Absolutely no sense.
There still has not been an update just on North Carolina real quick about Anthony Harris.
Oh, really?
Him. Yeah.
Interesting.
Huh. You had the spring game attendance.
Tennessee currently sixth nationally.
The other schools, Nebraska with the 86,000.
Pretty impressive.
Alabama listed theirs. And these are all just listed, so who knows what their actual is and what they're claiming. But I guess if you go with everybody's claim, then at least it should be apples to apples. Nebraska 86,000, Alabama 62,000. Ohio State and Penn State both 61, Clemson 60, and then Tennessee claimed 51,000. Oklahoma at 50, Florida 39, Notre Dame 30, on down the board.
There's a We Like Sports account that has all the numbers listed accurately, and then North Carolina just says 12. 12 people. Couldn't even count the damn team. In the attendance. That's a good boost.
So
that's an 85, wow. 85, 95 boost right there.
So Nebraska, I mean, they listed that as a sellout then.
Yeah. I mean, it
was a good crowd.
It looked like a real game. When they ran out of the tunnel, the video I saw.
There's
like,
nothing
the
to
deck,
do in Lincoln.
Like, it looked full.
Yeah, like, Memorial's capacity right now is listed at 85,458.
They averaged 89,000 last year for games. So they can go over that. You know, max attendance, but 86,000 or so for the spring game is really good. Just really good.
But, like, we were talking about this in the break. Tennessee's attendance was fine. Like, I don't have a problem with it at all. Like, I don't care. Like, it seemed like everybody had a good time. It looked great. I mean, it looked
weather held
good
off
compared to other people, to other schools. The only reason it was a story is because Jeremy Pruitt said he wanted it full, and we knew it wouldn't be. So that kind of was a mismatch there. But,
you think the threat of severe rain may have kept some people out?
I think a few people.
It did rain a little bit that morning off and on. Sky stayed gray longer than I think even the weather people predicted.
Yeah, if you had some people who were going to come in from out of town.
And they're kind
of
like,
you looked at that forecast, it turned some people away.
I would think so. Still think they did. It was fine. It wasn't embarrassing.
No.
I mean, you're not going to get articles written about you like Nebraska is today, but you did fine. Again, it's a meaningless number. I would rather have regular season attendance be up because that means you're really good. But
this North Carolina fan tweeted this: flash flood warnings and thunderstorms all across the state, and UNC still managed to bring more fans to their spring game than any other school in North Carolina. There's no doubt that Mac is back. Hashtag go Heels.
Jeez.
Check out this picture. More fans than any.
Okay, that might be 1,500.
1,500,
right? You could probably count them individually. They're spread out enough.
It looks like, it looks like when a high school team plays in one of the college venues for the state champion. Actually, it's not even
like
that
a first.
Full.
It's like a first round game.
Yeah.
That's not a championship crowd. That's not a championship crowd.
Mac is back.
Mm. Lucky you. Lucky you.
Well, what the coach is deciding right here on fourth down.
Okay, it's third and one. They're going to try to get this, and then they have to decide punt or go for it on fourth down. Let's watch. Dynamite stuff, Mac. Will not miss him in the booth. Nice guy, though. Hell of a nice guy. Just blatantly obvious. But good for North Carolina. The excitement in Tar Heel Nation is off the charts. Just completely through the roof for Mac Brown. Congrats to him and the fans. Tommy Thigpen still on that staff, or did he get rolled?
I don't know.
Question. Good for Tommy.
Check in with.
Good for Tommy Thigpen.
Old Thigpen. See how he's doing. Wonder if he probably doesn't gel too good with Mac Brown, right?
I wouldn't think so.
Does
that's why I was asking, did he get rolled? Because it seems like Mac might just say,
you're
not going to work around here.
The hostess trips to the ATMs and all that stuff. Yeah.
Burner phones, things like that.
Yeah. We'll come back with more. It's hour three.
It's neither here nor there.
Welcome back into the Fan Run Studios of Fox Sports Knoxville. It's hour three of Three and Out. Talked a lot of Tennessee football today after the spring game. Now we'll go through the long summer.
God knows what.
It does make me feel better. It's a just complete cupcake game to start the year.
Yeah, it should. We kind of ramp up into it this year. It's a good thing.
It was stressful last year.
Yeah.
For good reason.
Yeah.
We tried to talk ourselves into maybe having a chance in that game. And with the first snap, it just felt like you didn't. You had that one good drive, and you thought, well, maybe this start is an anomaly, and it just wasn't.
And then it was the Will Grier show.
Yeah.
Feel better about the secondary this year, though.
I mean, I do like that talk about some of the positives. I do like that Pruitt blitzed a lot in the spring game. I mean, it seems like he knows, or my thought process is, that maybe he knows that the defensive line is probably not going to get a lot of pressure on their own, so they've been actually working on trying to manufacture pressure. And
if you're a little better in the secondary, it makes sense. You can take a few chances blitzing. I agree.
And I think Bryce Thompson and Alante Taylor, I mean, you're going to have a we talk about position groups that aren't up to snuff in the SEC. You're going to have your top two corners are going to be as good or better than everybody in the league, save for maybe the top one or two teams. So, you know, you got to lean on that. You got to take advantage of it. Anytime you rebuild a program, you got to find somewhere where you're as good or better than your opponents in conference play. And obviously it's tough in the SEC because it's the best conference in America. And that's a spot where you feel like you can hang in man-to-man coverage. So you're going to have to use the nickel, use the linebackers to try and blitz and bring extra heat on the quarterback.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting when you look at the sack numbers from the game. Jordan Allen and Kyvon Bennett for the white team, but the orange team, Trayvon Flowers, safety, Theo Jackson, safety, Nigel Warrior, safety, Matthew Butler and DeAndre Johnson, defensive lineman. So three of your five sacks for the orange team were from members of the secondary. That's kind of a tattle. That's where Pruitt is going to try to bring some pressure from. And I think it makes sense. I mean, you feel pretty good at corner. I think you feel good overall at safety. And you've got some really good athletes who maybe aren't as great in coverage, you know. Yeah, man, like go Sin Flowers, Sin Warrior. It makes sense. Use their speed and athleticism to where maybe they don't have to think about things as much. Just go and get that guy. I have no problem with it. As long as you don't get just roasted over the top because you don't get there in time. And like I said, with this set of corners, I think you feel pretty good that maybe you can sacrifice a safety and leave either Bryce Thompson or Alante Taylor one-on-one and not be as at risk as maybe you have been in years past. It's a gamble. I mean, it is what it is. But, I mean, I'm trying to think. I mean, really, like, what, Georgia and Alabama are the two teams that just terrify you if you blitz and don't get there? Mm-hmm. Like, does Felipe Franks horrify you if you blitz and give him an extra second? I don't think so. The BYU kid does. He scares me. But I also think you can probably cover BYU a little better than you can cover Georgia and Alabama.
Yeah. I'm interested to see what they dial up as far as blitzes, because I honestly think, and it's not their own fault, but I think Alante Taylor and Bryce Thompson, from a statistics standpoint, might take a step back this year just because they're going to be in coverage a lot longer than they were last year because of the, I think the lack of pressure is going to be even more prevalent this season.
Well, I think that's why you're seeing the blitzes already. It's like, we've got to create more pressure. But by doing it with members of the secondary, you might have more pressure, but you're not going to have help.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see. I mean, you didn't have much pressure at all last year, and they were okay.
Yeah.
I don't know that it'll get, you know, tremendously worse. I think Darrell Taylor will take a big step forward. I think Darrell Taylor could have a huge year. I think him coming back may end
the
up being a super smart decision.
The potential is definitely there. Yeah, I mean, like, you talk about help. I was like, man, we had plenty of help against West Virginia, and it didn't matter.
Didn't matter. I mean, first game, that's a really tough matchup for a young secondary. But, I mean, when you look at what Darrell Taylor did against the two best teams in the East that you faced last year, I mean, hopefully, again, I mean, I don't think you expect three or four sacks a game from him, but even just the pressures, right? Like, that's what we need. Because there were games where he just disappeared. He wasn't getting sacks. He wasn't getting pressures. He was getting just stonewalled and having to stand there. Can he force some people to make uncomfortable throws? Can he force throwaways? Can he force some, you know, scramble and run for three instead of no pressure, throw for 30, that type of thing? And it seems like he's kind of ready to. He looks different. He looks like he's bigger, stronger, faster. He looks like he's ready to go. So he's a guy I think can make a really big impact for this defense. If you can blitz opposite or even alongside him and really confuse some offensive lines, I think against teams, again, not named Georgia, not named Alabama, you can probably get back there and cause some havoc. Against those two teams, though, I'd probably not want to leave Fromm and Tua to just pick you apart. Not that those are like winnable games anyway, I'm just saying. You don't want to get embarrassed out there.
Yeah.
Unless you can bait him into throwing towards Jalen McCullough, then it's a guaranteed pick.
Guaranteed.
Guy's a pick machine.
I mean, I wonder what that performance does for him in the eyes of the coaching staff. Like, do they care less about the spring game performance because it's actually less of a real scrimmage? It's just kind of like a show, or does that really move the needle? Jeremy Pruitt talked about McCullough and said he hasn't had a pick in any of their other practices.
Maybe he's a gamer, man. Lights go on. Let's play. I'm okay with that. I mean, he's, I don't want to say perfect, but I mean, he's 6'2". Like, isn't that ideal?
Yeah.
I mean, that's,
SEC.
And man, you just look at him and you can tell the way he runs, the way he caught the ball with his eyes, like looking towards the goal line. He's a guy who, when he picks it, I mean, he had two picks. He had 60 yards in returns off those two picks. Like, that's a really big deal. Like, God love Todd Kelly, but every time he intercepted the ball, he just fell down. Jalen McCullough catches it, keeps his feet, eyes up, and then you really help your offense out by shortening the field. That's what made Eric Berry so freaking good, was every time he touched it, it was going back the other way, you know, 30, 40, 50 yards or more. And a lot of those he ended up putting in the end zone himself.
Yeah, the safety position is going to be interesting. I mean, obviously, Nigel Warrior is...
I think you got a lot of guys that you feel pretty good about.
Started for a while. You've got Trayvon Flowers. He was with the starting group, as was Theo Jackson was. And then you had Cheyenne LaBruzza on the orange team also. But, I mean, it's possible that he's all the way down at third team with the way they've kind of split the roster up.
Mm-hmm.
The safeties on the white team, which would be your normal number twos, will be Brandon Davis, D'Angelo Gibbs, and Jalen McCullough. It seems like you might be developing a little bit better, you know, depth in that department because you played so many young guys last year. You know, I mean, you played Trayvon Flowers and Theo Jackson a good bit last year at safety, and now you bring in McCullough, and then is Gibbs going to be playing there too? This is the one benefit of being super young when you start, is that you should have some years later where you've got guys with a lot of repetitions and snaps.
For Gibbs last week, were we talking – they had him primarily at the nickel for a lot of spring practice. Was that what we discussed?
Well, it really it's really hard to tell because in at least last year on the field in games, a lot of times these guys listed at safety on Tennessee's actual depth chart or roster that's put out by UT are the nickel.
Yeah.
Like, so they list their nickel as a safety instead of a corner or instead of a separate position. So D'Angelo Gibbs was listed as a safety by UT for the orange and white game, but that does mean he might could be your, you know, one of your top nickel options. Because that's what was tough about the Will Grier matchup with West Virginia is a lot of times they would motion a guy or move some stuff around the formation and it would put one of your safeties in that, I guess nickel's the wrong word, in the slot position though. And a lot of times that safety's having to cover that receiver in the slot man-to-man if man-to-man is the defensive secondary's in. And if you're blitzing and that slot guy is one-on-one and he goes deep and there's no help, then that was really tough for Tennessee to handle in the West Virginia game specifically and then a couple other times during the season. So, I mean, I think you feel good about Bryce Thompson and Alante Taylor on the outside. Now it's how do the starting two safeties and the – really, I guess it would be the safeties outside of Nigel Warrior, how can they match up in and out of the slot and in run support? Because those guys have to be super versatile, right? You have to be able to play like in the box against the run game, but you also might end up one-on-one against the other team's best receiver in the slot. And that's what's tough. And that's where, I mean, Alabama puts guys in the NFL constantly that are really good at that. And I don't know, you asked a question one time, Houston, like, would it be dumb to just – like bump Bryce Thompson in against guys if that's where their best receiver is, or I don't know. Maybe Jeremy Pruitt might be thinking about some of those wrinkles coming up for the season to try and get your better cover guys into that slot/nickel position. But it does feel like they have at least a lot of guys that have played there. Now it's can some emerge as different difference makers in those positions. We'll come back, final segment of the show, to wrap things up next right here on Fan Run Radio. You tuning in and going through the weekend with us. Talked a lot of Tiger Woods and the Masters in hour number one. If you missed it, check out the podcast, foxsportsknoxville.com, and you can subscribe on iTunes, get those directly to your device there. And of course, we'll be breaking down some Tennessee football too. Lots of other stuff I'm sure we'll get to during the week.
I have a question.
All right.
We're going to save details for Westeros Wednesday.
Okay.
But what do we think about the premiere last night, Game of Thrones?
I had a fear that it was going to be kind of a setup episode.
Ditto.
And that fear became a reality. Like, I don't...
I didn't have a fear. I expected it.
I don't mind dialogue. I don't mind dialogue over action. But I'm not a huge fan of just an episode that's all expected
dialogue. Yeah, like what was set up, though, that we didn't already know? Like, I feel like we just, I don't think anything changed. Like, there's not really any new info.
The audience didn't really learn anything new.
Right.
But they set it up so that the characters actually knew a lot, which I think, if you're looking at it from a standpoint of character development, that'll have a big impact.
Is that where we are? Like, is that where we are, though? Like, we're still developing characters? Like, we got 5 episodes left. I needed something to happen.
You're going
to
have plenty of battles coming up.
I feel like
it's not even the battles. It's just things.
I feel like they had to kind of token do that because a lot of these characters haven't seen each other since season one. So they had to...
Yeah, you had a one... meet up between two characters that you have not seen since the first episode of the show.
So they almost had to just show that, I guess.
But couldn't they have done that in an episode where things happen?
I would say yes, and that was what
I mean. It was a cool moment. I mean, and like you said, David, like the audience all knew like what was going on. You knew it was going to happen. You knew at the end of last season it was going to happen, but then it happened and nothing happened. So it's just like, feels like.
I expected that to be the case, so I wasn't disappointed because that's what I expected. But I guess if you were hoping to actually see something and you didn't really get that, then I can understand why you're upset with that being the case.
Yeah, that makes sense. Well,
yeah.
It
just felt like a season 2 episode. It's like, oh, okay, cool. We got 9 episodes left in this season. We're good. But we have 5 left in the show. Needed things to happen.
It does feel like the ending's going to be abrupt, right? I mean, like, yeah. There's just no
like,
way.
Like, they're going to have to just tie up everything or leave us on 80 cliffhangers, which I don't want. There's just certain things I want resolved, and there was no resolution last night.
Well, we have 5 episodes left now, and
I look at it like 7. There's 5, technically, but just based off run times, I view it as 7.
DC okay. Coltrane says, not everyone rewatched the show. I didn't rewatch the show. Says, it's been 2 years. I needed it. So, get out of here, haters. It's not really what he said, but I can't say what he said. I didn't hate the episode. I just feel like you could have balanced. There's a lot of things that have to happen. I feel like you could have balanced them and given some meat in each episode. And now I'm worried that one episode's just going to be pew, 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 30 things happen, which is fine. I just would have balanced it out. That's all.
I do feel like they spent a little too much time on some things that could have been done shorter and not enough time on some things that could have been longer. I mean, I don't know. Like you said, we'll talk about it more later in the week.
Also, did Jaime make it from King's Landing to Winterfell in the same amount of time it's taken the dead army to move like a mile?
I'm not sure. If you do look at where this is random, but who I was watching with yesterday pointed this out. If you look at where his hair's at now versus where it was whenever he left King's Landing, it's grown a good bit.
He's been doing some other stuff on his way. He didn't just go straight there.
Well, that even cements my point further.
Yeah.
That army's slow.
They're very, very slow.
Yeah.
They can be fast, but they got to wait for all of winter to set in as they move.
I know. I mean, it seems like Winterfell, though, probably safe. Probably cold enough.
Yeah.
King's Landing still had a nice summer day.
They make it sound like they're about to roll in tomorrow, so they're there.
Yeah, I'm not going to say what the title of the next episode is, but...
Okay. So, I mean, I don't know. I'll be disappointed if all this is set up and then it's just like one big battle and some people die and some people live. It'll feel more like the end of a horror movie where it's like, okay, which star's just going to live and which star's going to die, and none of the plot leading up to it matters.
Right.
Because it's just like, oh, yeah.
Free for all.
Yeah, this one White Walker got this guy in the back, so he died. But this other guy lived because he just lived.
Ducked.
Yeah. Like, if that's the way they resolve it, I'll be disappointed. I'm sure they'll have at least some more layers than that, but
it seems like they're running out of time. I enjoyed it. I just got stuff to get to.
Yeah.
Got to get going. Got to start checking things off the list.
Talk Sports is next. It's John
How about
Reed,
that? You're on Greyjoy. Wow.
Cody McClure. They're next. Ben Lee. Keep it right here for more Fan Run Radio. We'll be back tomorrow with more 3 and Out. It is Fox Sports Knoxville.